Okay, I'm back.
And it seems as though we've been able to resolve that problem. I will come back out of mute mode in a couple of minutes, and so if you have any questions or comments, please store them up. But let me just make sure you guys can hear me.
Conversation mode is on. Everyone can now be heard.
Okay, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
Q&A mode is on. Participants may now unmute themselves.
It's this Abel Jimenez again.
Okay. Please, when you get on the line, just hit your star six, okay, so you mute, and this way we don't have any interference. Okay, so let me continue where I left off. Are you an expense or are you an investment? I believe that is the single most important question you want to be asking yourself every day when you go to work. And the second question that follows on that is, if I'm an expense, how can I shift what I do and how I do it to be an investment so that when I walk into the office, people around me feel as though I'm going to produce a return on investment. Everybody plays a better game because I'm on the team, all right? If you are an expense and you don't see any way to become an investment, then consider riding another horse or consider offering some new solutions that are outside the current scope of your skill set. And again, that's where we come back to this notion of letting go of your limiting beliefs that your value in the marketplace is simply based upon what you know how to do. Today, sometimes, who you know could be as valuable or more valuable than what you know. And as a quick example, if you got off the phone after this conversation and you went back to work at your company, and you said to them that I invested on my dime and my time, because you're paying money for the long-distance call and you're paying something much more valuable, you're investing your time, to find out how I can better contribute to the company that I work for. And I learned a few things, and I want to share them with you. And so one of two things would happen. One is your company would be wide open and eager to hear anything that you could contribute that can enhance the value that you bring to the customers and the value that you personally bring to the company. The other possibility is they shut you down, they turn you off, they're not interested, all right, in which case you have a very clear picture about what your future is with the company that you're working for. Because any company in today's climate that is not really maximizing and capitalizing on all the combined knowledge and wisdom and contribution that can come from anybody in the business, from, you know, the person who cleans the toilets, literally, to the person in the ivory tower, is a company that more than likely you don't have much of a future for. And I'd start looking right now for other alternatives. You know, as Harvey McKay says, quit before you get fired. All right. And one of the ways that you can discover that is to find something that can contribute to the company that you know has value, offer it to them, see how it's received. And if it's well received, well, you know, obviously you can add more value. So you can invest more time and more of your dime in becoming a greater asset to your company. If it's not well received, the handwriting is on the wall. Your upside there is limited. And more than likely, when times get tough, you may be one of the first to be expendable. So in summarizing this inner game, recognize that profit is everybody's business. Throw the box away, clean the slate, let go of your beliefs, any of them, that are not serving you. Get some real good clarity about what you do, how you do it, and whether or not you're the kind of person who gets things done, and then partner with and align with and collaborate with people who bring skills and talent to the game that can complement you, all right? The rainmaker mindset is not about necessarily having the answer. Let me repeat that. It's so important. This is really true for almost anything, but it's especially true for the rainmaker mindset. It's not about you necessarily having the answer. It's about you knowing that there is an answer and possibly knowing someone who has an answer. And certainly we have rainmaking answers, so at the very least you know one person who has the answer or an answer. It may not be the answer, and it may not be accepted or received, but at least you recognize that you don't have to have the answer. You just really have to know somebody who does, all right? Your value is not limited to your skill set and your knowledge, and your personal value can only be increased by either adding more skill to the game or riding another horse, all right? And so I want to encourage you to use this part of the conversation. We'll record this so you can go back and listen to it, but take on a whole new way of being in the inner game and recognize that right now there is no obstacle except your unwillingness to accept the possibility that you could make a contribution greater to your company than you're making now, whether you bring the solution or you bring me or someone else in to bring that solution to them, okay? So now let's talk about the outer game. And before we do, if anybody wants to comment or ask a question about the inner game, please, by all means, jump in.
Mitch, it's Peter.
Yes, Peter.
I just liked your point about the letting go of the beliefs that limit you, and just wondered whether you had any ideas, techniques to identify those beliefs. We play a lot on beliefs in the work that I do mm-hmm. at the moment, so I'm interested in knowing with someone like you, if you have a certain exercise or assignment that you give people to identify what their limiting beliefs are. Because normally we come from a fairly simplistic point of view in saying, well, let's have a look at your results. What are you getting at the moment? Because the results that you're getting are the consequence of your behavior, and your behavior is a consequence of your beliefs. So if you're not behaving to get the results that you want to be getting, then there's something wrong with the beliefs somewhere, and let's have a look at those. And then we work backwards from that. But I thought you might have other ideas on that.
I have two. And yours certainly is absolutely a valid one. And the first one is just it's a subjective, all right? And that is I look at any belief that I have, and I simply ask one question. Is this serving me, and is this adding power to my game? Or is this in any way disserving me or limiting me? It's that simple,
yeah.
All right? And I'm not talking about positive thinking, all right? You know, you can deny that some of the people who have the greatest positive thinking are stuck in the worst belief systems, and they're in denial. They're thinking that if I polish the outside of the car, somehow the car is going to run better, all right? So the first thing I do subjectively, and again, I will be the first to admit I am nowhere near a master of this. It's a constant struggle because the grooving of beliefs is so deep. So the first thing I do is I ask, you know, is this belief serving me? If it's not serving me and I hang on to it, how long do I want to hang on to it until I recognize that, you know, I can just let it go? So that's the first test. It's a very subjective test, and I don't always pass yeah. that test. All right.
Yeah. Hang on a sec. My point is, and I understand your questions. My point is, though, how do you identify the belief in the first place to which you then address those questions? What belief are you asking yourself, does this serve me or is this limiting me? How do you identify that belief to ask those questions?
Well, usually it just shows up. It's not so much a matter of, I mean, if you look at what you think day, minute by minute every day, in a way, I don't even care if the belief shows up, if it shows up in my day-to-day, then I must believe something. So I don't get too crazy about trying to figure out, you know, what is that belief, all right? But that's just me. So this may not be a satisfactory answer for you. I don't spend much time trying to identify the belief. I let the belief manifest itself, and then I kind of deal with it when it does. And maybe that's not the best way. Maybe that's why it's taken me so long. But here's the other thing, and it's something I've known for years, and actually I didn't believe it, which is really funny. Kinesiology is a simple muscle testing practice, all right? So you can either believe this works or don't believe it works, but there's more than enough evidence to prove that this very simple thing, kinesiology, where, you know, you put your arm out, you hold a belief, or you hold a sentence, or you ask a question, or you hold a book in your hand, or whatever it is, and somebody else tries to push your arm down, and if you resist, and you can resist, it adds power. If you can't resist...
I use that technique myself.
Great.
The kinesiology one,
I'm in the midst of rereading a great book. It was very hard for me to get through it the first time, called Power versus Force by David Hawkins. And the first time I went through it, it was like grinding teeth, right? For some reason, I'm ready for it now, and I'm blowing through it. And essentially, he says, and I will defer to him, he says you could literally test everything and anything in 10 seconds to see whether or not it adds power or it diminishes your power. And force, anything that has to do with force, is a diminishment of power. Anything that has to do with power is an enhancement. So it really you could break it down to something as simple as, here, you state your belief and then have somebody else push your arm down. And if they can push your arm down, then obviously that's a destructive belief. If they can't, it's a constructive belief. That's the simplest way I know, all right? And because this is the one exercise that you can do that's not a mental exercise so much, it's actually a physical thing that you can do, it's quick, it's easy, and he says, and I have no reason to doubt him, he says it not only works for, like, the inner game of thoughts, and it works for everything. It works for, you could be watching somebody on television testify on Capitol Hill and muscle test that, what that person is saying from who they're saying, and you could tell if that person's telling the truth or not. I mean, imagine how simple life would be if we could do that. So those are the only two things I have to offer. I don't know that they're satisfactory or not, but that's my response to you.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Mitch. In fact, as I say, I use that kinesiology myself, and that's usually where you can't identify, or where the individual who you're coaching cannot identify or has no clue as to what beliefs they might have that are holding them back. Then we would go into the kinesiology and basically ask the subconscious mind to say, am I holding beliefs that are actually limiting me? And you don't have to know what those beliefs are then, if the muscle response is positive. And then you could say, right, do you need to change beliefs in order to change behavior? And again, you'll get a positive response if that's what the subconscious believes. In which case, then you can start on the coaching side by saying, what beliefs do you feel you would need to hold to behave differently in order to get the desired results? And that works really well in the sense that, you know, they can look at role models, they can look at their parents who achieved some success before. What did they believe about themselves that caused them to behave that way? And so, you know, they'll take on board those, and then you'll start the conditioning process with those beliefs.
Well, I very much appreciate you offering that up to us, because that's very valuable, especially since this whole issue of beliefs is such an obstacle for most of us. And I don't always subscribe to some of the quick pop psychology, you know, change your beliefs, you change your life, change your thinking, you change your life. You know, that's true. But if it were that simple, then 90% of us wouldn't have any, you know, self-limiting beliefs. It'd just be that simple. So I very much appreciate you sharing that. I hope everybody got that. It's very valuable information. Peter Ward, he's an expert at this. He's been doing this for 25 years. So thank you for your generosity.
Thanks, Mitch.
Anybody else want to chime in before we move to the outer game here? Okay. So as I mentioned to you earlier and in my email, rainmaking is a learned skill. I learned it very early because I had to. I was self-employed at 23. And if I didn't make rain, if I didn't get business, you know, I didn't eat. And so I didn't have a playbook. I didn't have a roadmap. I didn't have anything to follow, per se. I literally went out and did it essentially by the seat of my pants. All right. That was 30 years ago. Since then, I've learned a whole lot about how to make this process predictable and provable. All right. Now, the first thing about the outer game of rainmaking is actually part outer game, part inner game. And that is the context of rainmaking is to expand the pie. It's not to grab a slice from somebody else. And that is a huge paradigm shift. One in which if you could just make that paradigm shift for yourself personally, that you have the power potentially to expand and enlarge the size of the pie. It happens every day. The notion that the only way that you can become more wealthy, make rain, increase your net worth, whatever it is by somehow grabbing a piece of somebody else's pie, because it's a fixed pie, that very notion will prevent you from becoming an effective rainmaker. Now, can it work? Absolutely. All right? If you can, you know, in a business context, there are companies every single day that are, quote, unquote, stealing or grabbing market share from other companies. And does that improve your net worth? Does that improve your revenue? Could it improve your profit? Absolutely. And so I'm not discounting that as a way to get to Eden here. What I am saying, though, that the rainmaker, when he looks or she looks at the pie, she doesn't see a fixed pie and look inside the pie as to where they can grab a larger share of somebody else's. They look at the pie, they go outside the pie, they throw the box away, and they look and say, where can we expand the pie? Where can we do more with less? Where can we redirect assets? And here's the key. Rainmaking is about actualizing your potential. And I would argue, because I like to argue, I would argue that rainmaking is not just something you do for a company. It's also something you do for yourself. So put a different label on it if you want, all right? But rainmaking, in a sense, for you personally, would be actualizing your potential. My dad was a New York City cop. You probably know the story. I'm the youngest of 8 kids. And before my dad passed away, we used to battle all the time over something. And he and I were very, very close. I was fortunate enough to have him in my life until I was 51 years old, which is a blessing. And we used to clash a lot over something. And now, after he's gone, I realize he was right. And it was all about potential versus actual. I'm a dreamer. I'm always in the future about what's possible. I'm a potentiality thinker, okay? My dad, having to have raised 8 kids in 2 different families and, you know, being very practical, my dad was all about actualization, not potential. And the battle we used to get into was I would talk about all the wonderful things that were going to happen in the future. And my dad would come back with a very simple line, which used to get under my skin. He'd say, great, why don't you call me and tell me when they actually do happen? All right? Now, I can tell you, I laugh about it now because I realize that, geez, he was so right. But for years and years and years, I felt as though he just never got it, you know? It's like, why don't you give me credit for the potential I have? Not recognizing that he was really sending me a very wise message, which is don't talk about what you're going to do, all right? Just tell me when you've done it, all right? It's good to talk about what you're going to do. It's good to plan, but everybody has potential. Our goal in life, it should be, is to actualize as much of our potential in the context of the model of soul, role, and goal. In other words, you actualize your talent in achieving the goals that you may have, and you do it in the context of soul, which means having a really wonderful intrinsic life, role, which means actualizing your talent in doing what your talent is, as opposed to just chasing some goal and ignoring your talent because you've inverted your value. You've put the goal ahead of the role. And now that shift in thinking, right off the bat, positions you as a potential rainmaker, but you don't actually make rain until you convert the potential into actual. And that's really the goal of a rainmaker. In the world of business, the goal of the rainmaker is to create more pie and to bring into reality something that right now is just potential, all right? And so a rainmaker is a catalyzing agent, and that's why rainmaking is a verb, all right? It's something that you do. It's something that creates an outcome. And so from a model perspective and from a, you know, what do you do and how do you do it, there are five what we'll call push-button profit points or leverage points that we as rainmakers look at. And all successful rainmakers are looking at one or more of these five profit points or leverage points because essentially, other than doing financial maneuvers, which is what got us into this mortgage mess that we're in right now, people, they let MBAs figure out mathematical models that you could take a mortgage and resell it five different times and you could actually make more money, but underlying that was not a sound economic financial model. It was purely a model to maximize profit, not to maximize value. And if all you do is try to maximize profit, but you don't maximize value, you may make rain in the short run, but you won't have longevity and you won't have sustainability because rainmaking is not just about bringing more money in. Rainmaking is actually about how do you exchange value in a way that money comes in as a result of the value exchange. It's not the result of an arbitrage or some other financial manipulation, all right? Because that's essentially just rearranging the existing pie. And again, don't get me wrong. There are some people who make a very good living rearranging the existing pie and moving assets from, you know, I think the U.S. Congress is probably the best example of it. All right, taking our money and giving it to somebody else. They're not enlarging the pie. They're actually creating more debt for us. That's not making rain. That's the antithesis of it. All right, what we're talking about here is enlarging the pie. And there are five leverage points. There's a document I'm going to give you. If you're not near a computer, then just write it down and you can download it another time. This is our primary document that we use with companies. When we talk to companies about making rain, this is our essential document. I'm going to give it to you now. It's at thenewgame.com/roundtablechart.pdf. thenewgame.com/roundtablechart.pdf. All right? And so if you're at a computer and you can download it, you'll see it. If you're not at a computer, you're in a car or something, let me describe it to you. Essentially, it's five steps or five leverage points. We'll call it push-button profits because essentially if you look at it as five different buttons, the question now becomes very simple. Which of these five buttons can you push right now to make rain right now? Which of these five areas is the best opportunity for you to push a button, generate more revenue or more profit in the shortest amount of time with the highest probability and the least amount of investment? All right? That is essential. Now, like I said, there's a sixth. I'm going to give it to you in the context of this, but I want to talk about these five because I have yet to meet a company in 30 years, including my own, all right, that doesn't have one or more of these areas that is underdeveloped or untapped or that they couldn't push a button a little bit more effectively and generate profit. So I'm going to take you through each one of these very quickly, and then we'll talk about how can you apply this in your company, in your business, and then we'll finish up with talking about if you're interested in working with me and or us, how you can take the next step, all right? Now, these five customer leverage points are in every business, and I call them customer leverage points because no matter how you cut it, making rain is about bringing more revenue into the company. And if you can bring more top-line revenue into your company with virtually no expense or minimal expense to get that revenue, most of it falls to the bottom line. And if you're a company of one or you're a company of 100,000, whether you do $50 or $100,000 a year or you do $50 billion a year, each one of these points is an opportunity to make rain, all right, in different ways. And so let me take you through them, and then we'll discuss each one of them. The five steps are attract, which essentially is commonly known as marketing and advertising. Marketing and advertising, or whatever promotion you do to attract a buyer or a prospect, if you will, is an expense, all right? Marketing is an expense. No matter how you cut it, if you're spending money to attract clients and customers, the critical step here is to be able to not just spend money on marketing, but to actually make sure that the people you attract in step two are qualified in such a way so that you spend the most time and the most valuable time with real buyers as opposed to browsers. And we make a distinction that essentially really is unique to us in terms of how we ascertain in this second step called qualify whether a person is a real buyer, a ready buyer, or they're a getting ready browser. And that distinction I just gave you. The question is, really, are you ready or are you getting ready? So in step one, attract, you have a marketing, promotion, advertising strategy that brings people to you, whether you go get them or they come to you. In the second step or the second push button leverage point, you then separate those people out, and one group of those people, if you really want to keep it simple, one group of those people are the ready buyers, the people who are looking for a solution now and are seeking a solution now. And if they found the solution now that suited them, they would be committing to it and buying. And you separate those people out from everybody else who is not ready, who may be in different phases of or states of readiness. Some people are just browsing. You walk into a store, I'm just browsing. Other people are not even just browsing. They're completely satisfied where they are right now, and they couldn't be the least bit interested in anything you have to say. All right? My guess is that the vast majority of you that are on this in this conversation, you're ready because if you weren't ready, you might not be willing to exchange your most valuable, precious time for something that might not pay off for you till 2009 or 2010, all right? So if you're making all the rain you want right now and you're satisfied, you're not even getting ready or ready. You're satisfied and you're not a prospect for me today. I cannot bank on making rain if I'm talking to people who are satisfied with their current condition. That's true in every business, no matter what business you're in. So qualify is the second point, and this one right here is an investment. So attract is an expense. Qualify is an investment, all right? When you qualify people who are ready, and those people then go from browsers to ready buyers to actually becoming a buyer, That process is known as conversion. Conversion is an untapped area for most companies because the vast majority of companies that I've worked with can improve their ability to convert qualified buyers into actual buyers. This is where you take the potential buyer and you actualize that buyer. And when you get to this phase, this next third phase, this is revenue. All right? Converting prospects into buyers is revenue. That's known as sales. Now, here's a critical thing for every company and every individual to understand, especially if you're going to be a rainmaker. If you make sales, when you make sales, sales has to do triple duty. Sales has to return your expense and investment in marketing or attracting and qualifying people. That's the first thing it has to do. The second thing it has to do is produce a profit, all right? Now, in a lot of companies, when they convert a customer the first time, there's very little profit. Some companies will actually lose money. Insurance companies, a lot of book clubs and CD clubs and really savvy marketers who have a very high ticket item often will lose money or break even on the conversion. And you say, well, how could you run a business like that? Well, because on the back end, the next two leverage points, they're doing so well in keeping and multiplying that if they can just break even on getting the customer, that customer over the lifetime value of that customer and the relationship you have will be worth a predictable amount of money. And the more you can predict, the more you can know what your customer value is over the life of your average customer, the better your position is to know how much you can spend and invest to get that customer. All right? And so as most people think, they think that the purpose of getting a customer is to make a sale. But that's not really true. The purpose of making a sale is to get a customer. Big distinction. So if your company is looking at this conversion point, which is not only the pivot point for revenue and profit, but if you're looking at this as the end, which is what the vernacular of the old game was about. In fact, you've all heard this. When you close a sale, the word close a sale assumes that that's the end as compared to really what it is, which is the beginning. So replace the language at the very least from close a sale, which essentially brackets it off, brings it to completion, and then you can go back and do the most expensive part of the process all over again, which is attract, qualify, convert, attract, qualify, convert. Companies that only play the game in these first three leverage points are constantly playing catch-up. Now, are there successful companies who just attract, qualify, convert? Sure. But that's not a model you want to build a long-term business on. The most successful companies play the game, and they play the game throughout the entire cycle. They don't just attract, qualify, and convert. They also understand that the real value is in keeping customers and multiplying customers over time, right? Multiplying profits. So the third piece of duty that the conversion process and the sales have to do is there must be enough money left over to be able to serve that customer after you've converted them. In other words, if you just attract, qualify, and convert, but you don't keep them, either because you don't have enough money left over to keep them or serve them after they've become a customer, or because you don't have a commitment to serve them and keep them, chances are good you are constantly going to be putting an enormous amount of pressure on the first three, attract, qualify, and convert, and losing the real value, which is in the final two steps of keep and multiply. So one of the things that I look at when I go into a company, I actually look at this first, is I look at their conversion process. I believe, and again, this is just my notion, you don't have to agree with it, that most companies work backwards. Most companies think about their marketing strategy first. How are we going to attract people? Then, if they spend any time, which a lot of them don't, on how we're going to qualify them, and then we'll figure out how we're going to convert them. And in my experience, that's really a backward strategy, that your marketing and your qualifying is best done as a result of and as an answer to your conversion process. And I'll tell you, I've been getting calls now, especially the last month or two. There's a massive amount of activity going on online, and I'm sure you're all online. You're seeing product launches. You're seeing all kinds of, you know, people calling, and it's unbelievable. And what I'm experiencing is the vast majority of people who are calling me are incompetent, totally incompetent. They have never been given training. They don't know the difference between a qualified buyer and a browser. They could not convert if somebody put a gun to their head, except by accident. And what's scary is that companies are investing a ton of money to market, attract, qualify, which they do terribly, most companies, with the hope that they convert. And so in most cases, we can help almost any company right off the bat just by helping them to reframe the game from, this is not a forward process, this is a reverse process. This is kind of reverse engineering. And that is, your marketing and your qualifying is best when it's a function of and a direct result of how you convert. If you convert on the phone, your marketing and qualifying ought to position you with the greatest amount of opportunity in front of as many people as you possibly can on the phone. If you're converting a sales letter online, let's say, and your entire marketing, qualifying, and conversion process is all put together in one sales letter, and there's no human contact, there's no chat, there's no serving people, no helping people, then you better be really, really good at copywriting that not is marketing copywriting, but is sales copywriting. Because the purpose of that is to convert and do it, you've got to do it all in a sales letter, okay? So if you look at your conversion process and then you say, what type of marketing and qualifying would be best to align with our conversion process, most companies that we've worked with, just by reframing that game, their sales have gone up, their revenue's gone up. Because they can let go of the marketing that's not positioning them for the best possible conversion, and they can then redesign their process so that the conversion process, or whatever their conversion strategy is being served in the highest and best way by their marketing, by their attracting, and their qualifying. So in many cases, we can save companies a bloody fortune and redirect some of the assets or the money that they're putting into attracting, which is marketing, and redirect that money to better capable qualifying and better able to convert. And in some cases, they, like, for example, I did a mortgage company back in the 1990s where their whole process was screwed up. And we completely revamped their five-minute sales process on the phone, and their sales jumped $47 million to $80 million in 90 days. All right, just by retooling the first three steps of the process and working backwards from the outcome, which is what is the highest and best way we can convert, okay? So that one pivot point right there, in probably 8 out of 10 companies, we can find money that's laying on the table because they've attracted people, they may or may not have qualified them well, and they probably have not converted. Because the conversion process is a process that's a skill-based process, and it can constantly be improved, all right? So that's the third pivot step, and that's a critical one because that's where you turn expense and investment into revenue. The fourth step, the fourth push button, if you will, is keeping customers. For years and years and years, I worked in the financial services industry. In that industry, keeping customers is the game. Conversion is the game, too, because they have to have a constant flow of new business. However, they are losing money on the conversion. They're one of the industries, life insurance, some annuities, most of the time, those companies will lose money, break even, or make a very small profit on the conversion when a browser becomes a buyer the first time. They depend on keeping the customer, especially true where there's repeated payments. So if you're paying your insurance every month, if you're paying into a membership every month, if you're paying a subscription every month, if you're in a retainer business, where at whatever kind of business you're in, where there's where the annuity, if you will, is the continuity, meaning that people keep paying month after month after month, this leverage point right here now becomes the critical leverage point, all right? Because if you convert them, they come in the front door, but they walk out the back door, you get stuck into that loop of attract, qualify, convert, attract, qualify, convert. And probably 60 to 70% of the companies out there, even to this day, with all of the strategies and the skills and all of the amazing proliferation of new game approaches, are still stuck in that attract, qualify, and convert cycle because they haven't figured out yet that service, which is how you keep people by serving them after they purchase, is actually an investment and potentially a profit center. One of the ways that a rainmaker, certainly what we do, is we show companies how to turn customer service into new business profit. Right there in that one push button profit leverage point is an absolute gold mine of opportunity for most companies. Because very few companies, percentage-wise, really understand, first of all, the lifetime value of a customer and the importance of keeping them. And if they do understand that, many of them are still deficient in their capacity to serve the customer after the customer buys. And we're all buyers, so you could go back just over the last couple of years and see what kind of a commitment do the people have to you after you make your purchase? Are they serving you on the back end in such a way where you want to buy again, you want to remain loyal, you want to overlook, a glitch in service or a problem that you have because they're caring and they're concerned and they're willing to serve you? Most of the time, this is a huge, huge leverage point, big opportunity to make rain. And especially true for companies with fairly good-sized customer bases. All right, I wrote a report about 10 years ago, and I did a whole series of radio interviews back 5-6 years ago about how we can stop outsourcing the service departments of major companies, and why we ought to stop outsourcing them, because when you look at service as a profit center, as compared to an expense center, you totally change the game. Totally change the game. And every single company has the capacity, the potential to actualize turning customer service into a profit center. And imagine if you did. Imagine if you turned customer service from an expense department into a profit center. You would completely transform the profit model of your business. And we show companies how to do this. Let me explain. If you look at the old model, which is marketing, sales, and service, right? And to some degree, it's still a model that works. But I'm going to give you another model that I believe is the new game model, and then you can see, look around you, and you can see that this is manifesting in every dimension, in every arena, and in every industry. And it's certainly manifesting in the massive proliferation of online marketing that's going on right now. Marketing is an expense. Sales are revenue. Service is an expense. So as a rainmaker, here's one of the major distinctions that I help companies make. The distinction alone is transformative. What would happen if you turned service from an expense department into a profit center? Here's what would happen. First of all, you would eliminate one expense department called service from the two expense departments in one income center, you know, marketing expense, service expense, sales income. Now, if you turn service into an income center, now you have one less expense department, and you actually replace it with a profit center. So that's the first transformation, and that transformation alone is enough to totally turn a company around, and we've had hundreds of stories of companies that have done that. The second thing is, if you buy into the new model, what I would say is the new game model, which is instead of marketing, then sales, then service, the new game model is serve, deliver, serve some more. Serve, deliver, serve some more. What would happen is you could actually reduce your marketing expense dramatically if you transformed marketing from the traditional thinking about marketing to a serving component. So in other words, we're serving you in advance. Now, if you don't think that this is a massive seismic shift, and I chronicled this 8 or 9 years ago, and it's taken years for a lot of companies to get it, but it's now clear that this has taken hold. What you're finding is that everybody is now looking at marketing not so much in the old way of thinking of brochures and direct mail pieces and telling you how great we are and, you know, positioning statement. All of a sudden, do you notice that marketing itself is transforming into a service activity? So if you sell a commodity and people can choose among all the commodities, and you're investing a ton of money on television advertising just for brand exposure, but you're not adding value of any kind, why do I want to choose your commodity as compared to somebody else's commodity? What's going to be the deciding factor? Well, if you're not adding value meaning you're not serving me in some other way, then chances are good you're going to be very price sensitive, because why would I want to pay more for something that adds little or no value that I could get somewhere else for less, all other things being equal? But we know, because you're guilty of it, I'm guilty of it, we all do it, that we're willing to pay more for something when we feel like we've been served, when we feel like we're better equipped to make a good decision, when we feel like we're cared for in advance as if we were already a customer, as compared to the old game, which is, you know, we'll care about you when you become a customer. But until you become a customer, you know, we'll keep hitting you with marketing messages, which may have no value. So look around you today, and you'll see that even the great marketers of our time have come to the realization that, yes, do you still need to market? Sure. But you'll see that marketing is now taking on a whole different set of clothing. And that set of that different set of clothing is really serving from first contact. So you get added value. You get watch my video. Listen to this audio. Come to a free teleseminar. Let me help you make a better decision. Let me do a price comparison. There have been massive billion-dollar companies built online that essentially just compare prices of different programs or different products, okay? Why is that a transformation? Because what most people are now getting in business is that if you want to increase your market share, You can't simply grab it from somebody else. You have to elevate your game. You have to become a six in a world of fives. You don't have to be a 10. And I'm not suggesting you don't strive to be better, but don't think you need to be perfect in order to win. You just need to be better than the vast majority of the other people in your industry. Why is rainmaking such a valuable skill? Well, if you sell B2B, business to business, and you add real value, not perceived value, which is another major distinction. You know, in the past, people put a lot of stake in perceived value, you know, but you can't take perceived value to the bank. You can't exchange it for food. You can't put perceived value in your gas tank. Adding real value is how you serve people. So if you look at this transforming reframe from marketing, sales, service, two expense departments, one income center, and that income center has to do triple business, pay off marketing, profit and sales, have the money left over to serve. And now you throw that model out and you say, we're going to serve, we're going to deliver, then we're going to serve some more. You could literally give away your solutions. You know, years ago I came up with a phrase when somebody said, you know, how do you work with people? I say, I give away the what and I charge for the how. I give away the what and I charge for the how. I'm giving you the what today. If you can take what you get here today and go back and apply it in your company and you can figure out how to do it, or you invest in something else to show you how to do it, we've basically given you the keys to the kingdom. Now, I'm not charging you to give you this what. Why? Because I understand that my value right now is not in holding back, but it's actually in sharing as much or more than I could possibly share. Because at the end of the day, I want to help companies mostly who have figured out what to do but don't know how to do it. Now, if your product is the what, you obviously can't give away the what, but you can give away a whole lot of stuff around the what that helps people to realize that you know what to do. And in the B2B world, this whole notion of serving people as a rainmaker becomes magnified, because if you are a rainmaker for your company and you're serving other businesses and you really want to be a distinctive service provider of choice, imagine giving away your rainmaking skills, your rainmaking secrets to your customers as a reason to favor you with the business versus somebody else. We've got a strategy which I cannot share with you here today because it's a fairly proprietary strategy, but our rainmakers are going to be in a position now where, as a rainmaker, we're going to be able to show you how you can capitalize on these rainmaking secrets as an added value for your customers. So if you're in business-to-business selling, and I mean business-to-business is meaning, you know, anything that's not just pure consumer marketing. If you sell to business owners, if you work with business owners, you know, in any capacity, having rainmaking skills in your own company doesn't just add value to you. It has the potential to put you in a position to add massive value to virtually everybody else that you want to sell and work with, even if the product or service you sell has nothing to do with rainmaking. All right? And I, before I got into the full-time rainmaking business, I was 10 years in the financial services industry, I would literally give away strategies for other business owners, because if they bought their insurance and they bought their investments through me, they would see me as a vendor if that's all I did. But if I could help them in other ways, if I got an idea that helped my business, I immediately shared it with all of my business clients because I wanted them to see me not just as the financial guy or the investment counselor or financial planner. I wanted them to see me as part of their board of advisors to help them grow their business. And the product that they bought from me had nothing to do per se with how I could add value. So anytime I got a tip or an idea or something that worked in my business, I would immediately call up, and back then it was mostly by phone or by mail, send a letter and say, hey, we just implemented this new strategy. I learned about it here, blah, blah. Maybe it'll work for you. Okay? So one of the ways that you can really, really make rain is, A, by converting this old model of marketing, sales, and service, two expense departments, one income center, to the new model of serve, deliver, serve some more, and turn customer service into a profit center. That doubles your profit center, sales and service, and reduces your expense center, marketing. And if you do this really, really well, which we've done with hundreds of companies, you can then reduce your marketing costs. And there are some companies who have reduced their marketing costs dramatically. We had worked with a little mortgage company a few years ago. They reduced their marketing costs $500,000 a year. All right, and they wound up, that $500,000 went right to the bottom line. Why? Because they recognized that their marketing was very expensive, but it didn't really produce a lot of qualified buyers, whereas serving people from the very beginning all of a sudden now produced a really good qualified buyer almost every single time. So that's the fourth leverage point. Now, inside of this leverage point, there's another leverage point which is kind of off to the side, and that is to reactivate past dormant old clients, people who haven't purchased from you in a while. I'm finding it, you know, kind of like kismet in a way, that I'm hearing from people that I haven't talked to in some cases 10 years, 20 years. I heard from somebody earlier this year that I hadn't talked to in 25 years. All right? And so if you're in the game for the long haul, you would be surprised at how many past customers, dormant customers, could buy again from you if you would just reach out and touch someone, all right? And because we're conditioned, most of us in business, to the first three leverage points, attract, qualify, convert, we get a customer, we go find another one, which is the most expensive part of the process, we're not typically taught and we're not typically conditioned to really invest a lot in our existing and past and dormant customer base. We, for some reason, we're either afraid of it, we're apprehensive, we think we haven't been in touch with people for a while, so they'll be angry or mad, and some could be, all right? So that's part of the downside. But the upside is so astounding that and so inexpensive that the cost to reactivate a past customer is nominal compared to the massive amount of cost to go get a new one. Now, most business owners actually know this in theory, but they don't practice it. All right? They're stuck in that groove of, you know, go back and new blood. Now, in some companies, you got to find new blood, and you're always looking for new blood. Yet, if you're looking to make rain and you want to do it in the highest probable way, in the shortest amount of time, with the least amount of investment, and you had a customer base of 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000, there's nothing cheaper, really, than a postcard. And you could, with a postcard, even if you couldn't afford to do 100,000 or 10,000, you could certainly do 100 a month or a week. With a postcard, you could touch base with them, and you have nothing to lose. And one or two might put their hand up and say, geez, I've been wondering. You know, I always tell the story back because in the insurance business, financial services, people are scared to death, literally, to go back to their customers. There's this, talk about mindset. There's a mindset in the insurance industry that if we go back to our customers, they're going to give us some grief. They're going to be angry with us. And some are because, you know, they didn't want you to stop serving them. They didn't want you to just sell them and move on to the next customer. But here's the truth, and it was proven by a study done in the industry, that when they surveyed the actual policyholders, 80% of the policyholders said, we would buy again if one thing would happen, and that was if the person would just show up. Imagine that, 80% of the buyers in an industry saturated with customer lists of millions and millions of people say, we would buy again if you would just show up, and companies spend billions of dollars on all kinds of fancy marketing and strategies and promotion, and they could literally just reduce their marketing expense if they would just take their customer base, divide it up by the number of agents they had, and say to every agent, you call every one of these people, and here's your script, and we give them the script. And at the end of 1 year, you've contacted every possible customer. That action alone will transform a company. And we've seen it happen literally hundreds of times. So this is a double leverage point. Keep the customers that you have active, and then reactivate the customers that haven't purchased from you in a while. Now, the fifth point, the fifth leverage point is multiplied. And I say multiply equals ROI. Multiply equals ROI, meaning your return on investment is going to come from how you really keep and multiply your customer satisfaction into more profit. And you do this through additional sales, back-end sales, upselling, meaning you sell a product of higher price or of greater value, cross-selling, which more and more companies are doing right now, which means you actually conceivably sell a product that's not necessarily in the same line as the product you sold. All right, it's a different product. Or somebody else's product. And that's where you're seeing a tremendous amount of marketing being done, proactive marketing being done in joint ventures today, where you're getting people that serve you are selling all kinds of other stuff because they realize that probably of the 90% of the people that are customers, those people could buy something that you don't manufacture if you would just give them the opportunity to do so. Now, again, this is something that most business people know, and yet they still don't do it. They're out there looking for a brand new customer before they're maximizing and capitalizing on multiplying the value of the customers they have. And again, very inexpensive, relatively speaking, to get a to keep a customer and to multiply a customer compared to acquiring a new one. And everybody can recite chapter and verse of what it costs to get a new customer times what it costs to, you know, less what it costs to resell an existing customer. And then if you look at their strategy and their approach, it's opposite of what they know. All right? They're out there trying to get the new ones. All right? Now, I'm not against getting new customers. We all need new customers to replace the ones that that we lose. And quite honestly, if you want to elevate your game and increase your pie, in some cases, you actually want to actively reduce the bottom 20% of your customers that are least profitable and add some new ones that could be more profitable, all right? And that's another strategy where you can make rain just by up-leveling the audience that you go after. When in 1982 I hit the wall in financial planning, I was going to be in or I was going to be out. It was that year that I developed the Take a Millionaire to Lunch approach. And it was very simple. I took about 20 people to lunch. Were they all millionaires? No. But I was very simple. I said, look, here's what I do. I work with people who have $25,000 to invest. Here's why I do it. Here's who I'm looking for. I'm looking for people who have $25,000 or more to invest. And essentially, I was looking to up-level my market because I was 27, 26. I didn't know anybody who had money, not in my immediate circle. And within 2 years, I went from earning $16,000 to $100,000 a year. And I have not looked back since, right? So that one strategy, by up-leveling same service, same deliverable, same me, different strata of customer, all right? So ask yourself, is there a way that I can up-level a portion of my service and create a premium client? Is there a way that I could take the 20 or 30% of the least profitable business that I have, literally give it to another firm? Because there's always a firm out there, a company out there, who would be happy to service the bottom 20, 30, 40% of your customer base, and you get a referral or a finder's fee or a service fee for just giving them the business, and you turn your attention to a higher, more profitable type customer, all right? And so that's the fifth leverage point, is multiply. And very few companies are doing that as well as they could. Now, this is, I mean, I'm simplifying it. There's obviously more to it, but I don't want to make it more complex than it needs to be. Right now, you know more about rainmaking than I would say probably 80 to 90% of the people in business who are responsible to make rain, because most of them have not seen all of these five different leverage points, and if they have, they're probably not capitalizing on all of them. And again, like I said earlier, I've yet to meet a company, my own included, that is really taking maximum advantage of each and every one of these leverage points. So you can take this model back to your company, and you can look at what you're doing, and you can say, where is the opportunity for us to make rain? And pick the one right off the bat that would produce the biggest yield in the shortest amount of time with the least amount of investment. For some companies, it's been literally zero investment, other than the investment that they pay us to understand how to do this. You know, in some companies, we give them the what, and they go and figure out the how, and they do it on their own, and we get referrals from them because we were the ones to help them figure out the what, and they already know how. The ones that don't know how, they call us and they say, can you help us? All right. So right now, if you've hung in here, you now have the fundamental foundation of where rainmaking takes place. Now, do you have to know the specifics of each of these areas? Well, it would be helpful if you did, but very few people are experts in each of these areas. We all have certain areas that we focus on, and depending upon your role in your business or your company, you might be more heavily weighted towards the attraction and the qualifying, or you might be in sales where your job is to convert, or you might be in a company where you have to do it all. You have to attract, qualify, convert, keep, and multiply. All right? So depending upon where you are, what your role is, at the very least now, you have a clear understanding of where rainmaking takes place. And so at the very least, you can now go back to your company and share this and say, where is our opportunity? Now, of course, if they can figure out how to do it and where to do it, you have just become more valuable as an asset. By investing in this time on your own dime, you now have increased your value to your company. If they don't appreciate it, if they don't want it, guess what? There's lots of companies out there that would love to have this model to be able to see just from a glance where their opportunities are, and then to be able to have some strategies around how to capitalize. And believe me when I tell you this, because it's first of all, it's true, and it's true to the tune of about $2.5 billion, that for the past 20 years, aside from my love of working with people just to improve the quality of their lives, this has been literally a slam dunk business for me, to the point where I can essentially work as much as I want to work and work with the companies that I want to work with and go after the companies that are ready for this as opposed to those that are not. And it's been able to make me a wonderful living, to do great work that improves the quality of the business lives of people, the profit of people, and in turn, there's a lot of great personal satisfaction. And I wasn't born knowing how to do this. I learned how to do it. Now I've modeled it, and it's easily transferable. All right? And so you now can own it for life. Now, whether you want to go further with this or whether you feel like you want to pursue this a little bit more and drill deeper, that's up to you. But in terms of making rain, there are probably a few other tricks which I would share with you, but this is the foundation of where all the leverage points are in almost every business, all right? And if you just stuck with these five leverage points, you could almost help every single company that was ready for help, and as Joe said earlier, willing to actually pursue something. Because for some companies, it's going to be a radical paradigm shift. For other companies, it'll be like, where have you been all of our lives, right? So now, to kind of bring this to a conclusion, and then I'll be more than happy to take questions or comments from you, But let me spend the next just a couple of minutes to talk to you about what I'm going to do starting December 1st, which I've never done before. And if it's of interest to you, you're going to have to just make a decision and either get in or not get in. We have a program called RainmakersForHire.com. All right, it's essentially a partnership program where not only do I work with you privately for 6 months, meaning you have access to me completely for 6 months, and I work with you one-on-one, but you also get to be a part of our team, so you participate in our group meetings, and you also get to resell, coach, train, consult, speak, however you want to do it, the solutions around these five leverage points, right? We have the solutions, the specific solutions, and even if you don't deliver it yourself, you could open the doors and we can partner and work together, all right? That's a partnership arrangement. You can go to RainmakersForHire.com and read about it. Essentially, you're getting into business with 6 months' worth of private coaching with me for $10,000 or $5,000 up front and $1,500 a month for 5 months. So if you pay it off over time, it's $12,500. I guarantee you double return on your money. And after you get double return on your money, we then start to share and split the profits from there on 80-20, all right, until you hit a quarter of a million, then you keep 90% and give me 10%, all right? And essentially, there's two or three people that are on this call who are our rainmakers. You might have heard them earlier. And so if you're really a serious candidate for that, I've only got a couple more people I want to work with at that level, and then next year we're actually going to franchise this and turn it into a much more expensive investment. But between now and the end of the year, if you feel like this is something that you want to do, literally for $5,000 you can get in the game. And for most people, if you follow what I share with you and you have an existing access to people, you can get your investment back usually within 60 to 90 days. I'm not going to promise you 30 days. I mean, the realization is if you can't get your investment back in 6 months, you ought not do it, all right? The upside on that is huge. But for the people that really are not candidates for that, either not qualified, not ready, don't have the money, I'm going to do something here that I've not done before. And I call it the Rainmakers Crash Course, all right? This program is going to be launched, actually, next month. I'm speaking at Harvecker's Millionaire Mindset Retreat, or whatever he calls it, and we're going to offer this program for $2,500. Essentially what it is I'm going to give you a crash course in rainmaking for yourself, all right? This is nothing to do with you partnering with me, but essentially I'm going to give you a crash course in 60 days. We're going to start December 15th. We're going to go every other week for 2 months. You get four sessions, group sessions, where we're just going to go right into how do you leverage each of these points. Plus, you get 1 hour with me privately, or 2 half-hours with me privately. In addition, you get access to our Rainmaker videos and also the new game of selling. The combination of those is worth more than the cost of this investment. So the Rainmakers Crash Course, which is going to sell for $2,500 on December 10th, which is when I'll be speaking at Harvecker's program, I'm going to offer between now and December 1st, if you want in on this program, for $1,000. Okay? What you get is you get four sessions, group sessions. You get one private session with me up to an hour or 2 half-hours, whichever you want. You get the new game of selling, which is $1,000 training. You get access to our videos. This is all for your internal use. You don't have a right or use to sell these, market these. That's what the Rainmakers for Hire is, all right? This is really all about you becoming a rainmaker quickly, immediately, for your own company. And for your own business, if you're in your own business. So for $1,000, you get access to all of the above, okay, what I just shared with you. And the other part of this is if you decide to become a rainmaker for hire, all right, between now and the end of that program, we will apply that $1,000 towards your Rainmaker for Hire. All right, but come next year, the Rainmaker for Hire program, Rainmakers for Hire, is going to change. And right now, you get access to me for 6 months, unlimited access, literally. Come the first of the year, that's going to change, all right, because I'm shifting gears, and I'm not going to spend as much time. We're going to work with the Rainmakers that we currently have because we've built up some really great momentum, and as a couple of them said, 2009 should be all of our year. So if you feel like you have at least $10,000 or more of upside potential, if you want in a company that your company is doing a few million dollars and you want to be a rainmaker within your company or offer value of as a rainmaker, you are not going to get a better opportunity to do it, and you're certainly not going to get a better price to do it, okay? $1,000, you're either in, you're not in. If you're not in, that's okay. Take what we've given you here today. Use it. Apply it. And, oh, by the way, if you do discover that you do have a lead for us or you have a company that might want to do this, I'm more than happy to pay you a referral fee for introducing us to a company. All right, so whether or not you're actually in the Rainmakers for Hire or you take the Rainmakers crash course, if you have a company and you call me and say, Mitch, I have a company that I think could really use what you're doing, if that comes to fruition, we'll pay you a finder's fee, a referral fee, which we'll also do if you're in the Rainmakers crash course, because obviously we want to give you a way to get your investment back. So there's three ways you get your investment back. One is you make more rain in your company, all right? Secondly is you refer somebody to us, and if that pans out, then we pay you a referral fee, which will more than make up for the investment you make. And that's part of my strategy too, by the way, all right, is because once you have rainmaker skills, it's like buying a red car. You see red cars everywhere. Once you have those rainmaker skills, once you see this model and you keep it in the forefront of your mind, every single company you talk to, every business person you talk to, you're going to be thinking, are they attracting, qualifying, converting, keeping, or multiplying as well as they could? And you would, as a rainmaker in the crash course, you actually will get this model and you can use this model and we'll give you some other support materials. So that's the second way, is through a referral. The third way, as I said earlier, is if you decide to leverage the Rainmakers crash course into becoming a full-blown Rainmaker for Hire, we will credit your $1,000 investment toward the Rainmaker for Hire. So it's a way for you to kind of see if it's something that you want to do. All right. Now, I'm only doing this for the people that are in my community already. All right. This is not going to be offered to anybody else, anywhere else. And the price tag that it really goes out at, which will be come December 10th, is $2,500. So you're getting a pretty big discount off of that. Now, why am I doing it? Very simple. I want to work with three or four people who want to make more rain. If I can add value to you, chances are good next year, either you're going to become a rainmaker for hire, you're going to refer us business, rainmaking business, or you'll become an incredible success story for us, all right? One of those three, and any of those three, is a positive outcome for me. And I'm willing to invest over the next, you know, month or so, 60 days, I'm willing to invest the time to help you make that transformation. So bottom line is very simple. If this makes sense for you, if you feel it's a good investment, you get on the phone, you call me. I'm only doing this with 10 people because I don't want to invest more than 10 individual hours. So if you feel like it's good for you, get on the phone, call me at my office, email me. You give us a credit card by phone. There's no website. There's no web page. There's no sales letter. There's no video. This is it, all right? If you don't decide to do that, I'm thrilled that you can get some value out of this conversation. If you've gotten value out of this conversation, I would very much appreciate you sharing that value by way of a letter to me or an email to me and just say what was most valuable to you. And so if you're a candidate for the crash course, give me a call right away at 973-736-1304 or email mitch@thenewgame.com. If you're not, please feel free to send me a letter about the value of this conversation. And whatever you do, don't ever underestimate your ability going forward to have the potential to make rain. All you have to do is look at this chart every day and see where those opportunities are. And if you can't do it, then please call me because we'd be more than delighted to help you and that could be lucrative for you as well. Okay? So that's the end of today's program officially. I will stay here to answer any questions, to take any comments, anything you want to talk about. So please feel free to come off of mute and jump in. And thank you very much for spending the time. Anybody want to jump out and say anything? I'm going once. All right. Okay.
Hello, Mitch.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, I've just come off mute. I didn't know if there was someone else on talking to you already.
No.
It's Peter. I just wanted to thank you once again because you've, as usual, you opened my eyes to quite a few things. And I'm locked into that attract, qualify, convert cycle. And I've probably become a victim of my own success in the sense that, I've just repeated that cycle all the time and I haven't focused anywhere near on the reactivating previous clients or focusing on the servicing of existing clients. So the keep and multiply have just been out of the question altogether. And I thank you for that. As usual, it's tremendous value. With regard to the Rainmakers, I want to contact you in January because I've got a project to put to you which should blend in with your ideas on the Rainmakers crash course as well as the Rainmakers for Hire. So I'm leaving for South Africa shortly. I've got a project out there, and I'll be back in January and in touch with you then to put this prospect to you.
Terrific. Thank you for your kind words.
Okay, Mitch. Good luck, eh?
And thank you.
Have a good Christmas if I don't speak to you beforehand.
And you as well.
Thanks. Bye for now.
Anybody else want to jump in? Anything you want to contribute or ask? Okay. I want to say something about what Peter just said. And because I could be guilty of this myself, if you're in that cycle of attract, qualify, convert, and you've been in business any length of time, or if you work with a company that has, I will tell you that no matter what you do, no matter how successful you are in the attract, qualify, and convert, if you just redirected 10% of your energy and your time into, and you could do this systematically because there's plenty of ways you can systematically go back to people, that 10% of redirected energy and investment of time into keep and multiply would pay you off magnified, and it would get you out of that repetitive cycle of attract, qualify, and convert. And that, believe me when I tell you, you know this to be true because you've been watching all these new product launches. The single major shift that has occurred, and I will take credit as humbly as I can for some of this, because in 2006, I suggested that at a seminar that I was the keynote speaker, that the game has shifted from marketing, sales, and service to serve, deliver, and serve, and that the game is no longer about selling a product, it's about getting results. And you're seeing right now that people are giving away, literally giving away tons of content with the hope and possibility that you will sign up not just to buy in, but to get the result. And the way that you get the result is not just by buying the product or service, it's by using the product or service, by implementing the strategies. And so now, all of a sudden, this seismic transformational shift that's occurring not just online but offline, from the idea of let's sell you a $1,000 product and then hope that you get results, to let's give you the $1,000 product and then we'll charge you $100 or $200 a month over time to make sure that you get the result, because the result doesn't come from the purchase. The result comes from taking it out of the box and implementing it. And we can help you implement it if we can continue to serve you, as opposed to we just attract, qualify, convert, and then you're left to your own devices to figure out how to use it. So that, of all things, has been the major transformation, and people are now finally acknowledging that the old model of market, sell, and serve is now replaced by the new model of serve, deliver, and serve some more. And over the next couple of years, you're going to see Even some of the stodgiest, most traditional companies are going to change their model from that old game model to the new game model. So keep your eyes out, keep your ears peeled, as they say, and always be on the lookout for opportunity. And the last thing I'll say is, if you really want to be worth more, don't get stuck in saying, I can't. Shift your thinking and shift your language to say, I know someone who can. And at the very worst, you can pick up the phone and call me, and I'll be delighted to help. Okay, anybody else want to jump in? Last opportunity to make a claim, a statement, or ask a question. No? Okay. Thank you very much for joining us today. You are a player. You can change the game, and I look forward to meeting you on the field. There will be no call next Friday. For those of you in America, have a very happy Thanksgiving, and I look forward to hearing from you again soon. Take care and be well.